Awesome, like podcasts and stuff?
I've seen people with podcasts less desperate for approval.
I hope this isn't about your podcast again.
Please, podcasts are verbal narcissism for ugly journalists.
Welcome to the Awful Announcing Podcast. Here's your host, Ben Heisler.
What's good, everybody? This is the Awful Announcing Podcast. My name is Ben Heisler. I'm glad to have you guys along with us for today. Fun, slightly different episode for you. We will be joined by Fox NFL and college football rules analyst Mike Pereira. Coming up in just a bit, Mike is an outstanding interview. Really fun guy. We'll talk vodka and we'll, of course, talk a little bit of rules as well with regards to some of the changes happening in the NFL this season. But we are starting things off today with something that I've kind of missed. I'll be a little bit selfish. These interviews are fun. I enjoy a lot of the people that are kind enough to come on this podcast, but I don't get a chance to spend enough time with these two dudes. They are outstanding writers over at awfulannouncing.com. Andrew Buchholz, you can follow on Twitter at Andrew Buchholz, and of course Joe Lucia is at Joe_TOC. Gentlemen, hello.
Hello, Ben. How are you?
I'm splendid. How are you guys?
I'm doing well. Thanks a lot for having us.
Well, it's good to have you guys back because I know that opinions are well thought out. I know that there are nuances. It is very different than the typical sports talk radio that I'm used to hearing on a daily basis. So this is nice. We can actually have a few adults in the room and have a conversation. It is NFL season. It is college football season as well. But I want to start with the NFL. It's clearly still the king of all sports and of all media right now in the world that we live in. And normally there's some broadcast news of things that have changed and there's something different. And this year, the only notable exception is Jason Witten decided that this broadcast thing isn't going to work for me. I'm going to go back and play for the Dallas Cowboys. So now we got a two-man booth with ESPN with Joe Tessitore and Booger McFarland. And he's actually in the booth instead of blocking people in the stands. So what do we think of this new two-man booth for ESPN? And Joe, I'll start with you.
I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better, but I think it's going to be a lot cleaner, I guess you could say. I think they're going to have more chemistry with the two of them just sitting next to each other in the booth without having one guy on the sidelines and one guy in the booth and trying to weave it into something resembling a coherent broadcast. But I don't know how much actually better it will be just because I'm not sure about the whole Booger McFarland long-term MNF analyst kind of thing. Joe Tessitore is, of course, fine, but it's going to be interesting to see how it ends up working together just because last year was such a very rough season for the trio. And this year they're bringing back two of the three, changing things up a little bit, but I think it's going to end up being more of the same overall.
I think the cohesion will be much better. I think anytime you're incorporating a third guy, whether it be how the NHL does it with the on-the-ice reporting, or if you have basketball incorporating sort of a sideline down on the court reporter, it just doesn't seem to work. And yet these media companies continue to want to take these types of chances when we know that when you're together, when you can see somebody next to you, the broadcast is going to sound better. And I do think, Andrew, that Joe and Booger, again, with the connection that they have from the college days, I do think it'll be a better, more coherent broadcast. Maybe I'm too optimistic here.
No, I think I agree with you, Ben. I think it's going to be better because it's addition by subtraction. I think Jason Witten really didn't bring a lot to that booth other than bringing a lot of criticism to it. And so I think just having him out of there is helpful in the first place, and also just in the reduction of numbers from the three-man booth to the two-man booth. There are some three-man booths that occasionally work, but it's a tough thing to pull off because it's not always clear when one person should be talking, when one analyst should be making a point, if you're going to step on the other person's shoes and so on. The two-man booth, it does seem to flow a lot better, and I think that will be helpful here. And I also do think it will be very helpful having Booger in the booth and having him develop that chemistry and develop that rapport with Joe Tess there. I think the thing that's interesting to me is I've been watching Joe Tess calling the ABC mini golf show Holy Moly this summer, and he's very funny. He's got a real personality and he can be a real charismatic announcer, and I don't think we got to see that on Monday Night Football because of all the drama with the three-man booth and with them not in the same location with all the criticism. criticism for Jason Witten. And so I'm interested to see if we get to see a bit of that side of him. Obviously, Monday Night Football is a much more serious property than Steph Curry's extreme mini golf show. But I think there's maybe something there that could work a little better now that it's him and Booger in the booth.
The impression that I got was that the criticism with Jason Witten was that he couldn't put a sentence together. The criticism that I got with Booger McFarland was, I think Booger's crazy for that opinion. It was more occasional hot takes in the middle of the broadcast. Did you guys get that perspective too? That Booger called a fairly good game, but when it came to a lot of the opinion that was thrown in as far as the conversations that were outside of what was actually happening in the field of play, I thought that's where the biggest criticism for Booger McFarland came in. Is that a fair critique, Joe?
Yeah, I think that's about on point with what you said there. It's a situation where he's used to being in the studio and he's used to just kind of firing off take after take after take and calling a game. I mean, it's a little bit different. You're not in this situation where you can just say something and you have 30 seconds to talk about it and then you move on to the next topic. There's a lot of time to talk about these kind of things. So if you say something ridiculous, you better be able to expand on and explain what you're talking about. And I don't know if that's something he really mastered in his first year in the booth.
Andrew, do you see that as something that we might start to see in more broadcast booths? We've seen obviously more programming come towards the way of opinion-based and debate. Do you think that's something that could end up in the broadcast booth as well this football season?
Yeah, I don't think overall. I think there are definitely times where we see analysts with wider ranging takes on the game. But as you guys have mentioned, with Booger in particular, it seemed to stand out and not in a good way when he was doing that. And I think that's more of a function of that studio analyst background and of that radio background. And I think in some ways it's comparable to what we've seen with Alex Rodriguez on baseball, where he was very good in the studio for Fox, where he could watch a game for 3 hours, focus in on a couple of things, and then make his points about those things and be done. He's much less good, or in a lot of people's minds anyway, he's a lot less interesting and less compelling when he has to talk after every couple of pitches and when he is often dropping a lot of those takes about the game overall rather than analysis of what we're specifically seeing on the field. I think a lot of people who are watching game broadcasts don't really want that wider conversation necessarily, unless it's related to something that's just coming up in the game. And from a perspective of covering this stuff, generally when game broadcasts make news for bringing up an NFL-wide issue or a college football-wide issue or MLB-wide issue or whatever, it's not good news. It's they say something dumb, they get mocked by us and everyone else, and it becomes a negative story. So I think they would be a lot smarter to stick to the game and to stick to analysis of whatever we just saw. And I think maybe Booger can get there a bit more and realize that what he might say in the studio isn't necessarily a fit for a game broadcast.
One thing that I'm thinking of before we move on to college football and what we're going to be likely experiencing over the next several months, when it comes to their broadcasts and their breakdowns and their studio shows, I'm thinking about Tony Romo now entering his third year as the lead analyst with Jim Nance and Tracy Wolfson. Year one, I think Romo, I don't want to say he got a pass, but he sort of brought something very different. There was a new energy there. You could obviously see that Nance felt a little bit more excited to have him there. I think year two, it was less about sort of the gimmicks of Romo and more focusing on Romo the analyst. Do you think we're going to start to see more critical breakdowns of Romo now that he's in year three? Or do you think he's starting to finally figure out more of the nuances there and it's less about the Tony Romo show and more about delivering a good value? And Andrew, I guess I can start with you here.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both, really. I think, yes, absolutely, there's more room for criticism now that he's been doing it for a few years. But I think also at the same time, he's learned from the first 2 years and he's developed as a broadcaster and it's become more than just the predicting plays. And so I think absolutely there will be people maybe giving him less of a pass now that what he's doing isn't so new and isn't so different anymore, but at the same time I think he's already learned and grown and improved, and I expect to see that continuing this year.
Joe, is that something that you see as well? And maybe sort of to follow up on that, Are there any broadcasters from the CBS or the ESPN or the Fox or the NBC team that maybe you think there will be a little bit more of a spotlight on this year for better or for worse?
Yeah, I agree with most of what Andrew said. And I think a lot of the Tony Romo mystique, I guess you could say, over the first 2 years was built on the whole play prediction thing and how he was able to just nail all of these so much. And I think that's a gimmick that can kind of be worn down a little bit. And we're not going to be so impressed when he does it this year compared to the first 2 years. And that is something that could lead us to focus on his broadcasting as a whole and some of the other areas and could open him up to a little bit more criticism there. As for other broadcasters that could be under the microscope a little more, I mean, you look at someone like Jay Feely at CBS, who was really just a kicking analyst for his first few years there. This year he's going to be regularly teaming with Tom McCarthy in the booth, so he's going to be getting a lot more attention there. And as for anyone else, I mean, most of the guys are the same announcers and the same pairings we've seen over the last few years. So what really new things are we going to learn from someone like, say, a Greg Gumbel, who you know what you're getting at this point in time?
Let me follow up on that really quickly before we move on to college. Do you feel like a lot of these NFL pairings, normally we say like, okay, if you've been with the same analyst for several years, you develop chemistry, you develop a relationship, it sounds a little bit easier. But so many of these pairings have been together for so long. Do you think there'd be any benefit to switching out a couple play-by-play guys and a couple analysts and moving some possible relationships around to just try something new and something fresh?
I mean, if it isn't broke, don't fix it. And in a lot of these situations, I mean, the pairings are working out really well, so there's really no need to just mix it up for the sake of mixing it up. However, there are some older broadcasters there that might be nearing the end of the line, like Dick Stockton, for example. So you want to kind of have somebody ready in the wings to step up and take more of a role on in the future when their time goes.
And Andrew, you talked to Dick Stockton too for Awful Announcing, mm-hmm. and he sounds like he's not going anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah, I definitely got that was last year, and I definitely got the sense that he wants to keep doing this. I think with him, it may be more a question of how long Fox figures they should keep him around versus bringing somebody new into that slot. And it's interesting because, I mean, he's in one of the lower teams. This isn't like their big featured game that's going to everyone all the time. And so there becomes an interesting sort of a question about, like, well, do you try to push somebody out before they're ready to go to move on with some young talent and potentially take some negative headlines for that? Or do you just let him keep working as long as he wants to work?
Yeah, there's a lot to dive in and a lot to try and evaluate as to where that future and what that next position is going to look like when it comes to who's going to replace Dick Stockton. He's been a fixture for a long time, but you know, unfortunately, sometimes his mistakes have been what's kept him in the news as opposed to good calls over the last several years. Let's move on to college football because we already had the week zero go through, and I know when this podcast will be released, we will have just finished up week one in college football, but we've already started to see some major changes. We've seen some broadcast changes, but let's start with the pregame show for Fox. It's going to be a different look this year. You have Rob Stone, Reggie Bush is now going to be a part of the mix, Urban Meyer is replacing Dave Wannstedt, Matt Leinart will be back, and now you have Brady Quinn. To me, it just kind of feels like out of all of this, it's new names, some new faces, maybe some slightly bigger names. I don't know if it necessarily makes the product better. So, Joe, do you feel like this is actually a big change for Fox on the pregame side? And do you think the change was well warranted?
I would say yes, it is a big change. And yes, it was warranted because they had this mini-ish pregame show on FS1. I believe it was Rob Stone, Matt Leinart, Dave Wannstedt. That sounds about right.
Yeah, Wannstedt was there.
And those guys are still going to be there, but they're adding in Reggie Bush, Urban Meyer, going with the names. You got to have these guys that bring in the casual fan. They're moving it over to Big Fox, which I think can only help them in the long run. But will it actually be a better show? I mean, Reggie Bush doesn't really have much broadcasting experience at all. Urban Meyer last did this, what, I want to say 7 or 8 years ago. It's been a long time for him. I'm not sure how that's going to work. And you're adding two guys into this pregame show that already had kind of like a decent chemistry going. I wouldn't say they were the best pregame show around, but you know, they were used to working together. They were comfortable together. It wasn't an awful watch. It was just fine. And when you're adding two names into that, it can really kind of screw things up, make things a little more complicated. And I'm really curious to see how it all meshes out together this season.
I'll be honest. I'm a Wonstedt fan. I've heard a lot of the interviews that he's done in the Chicagoland area, and I think he's really interesting and certainly a big personality. And I think as a coach's perspective, I certainly would rather hear what he has to say, because I think he'll be a little bit more honest than Urban Meyer. But Andrew, do you like the new move that Fox has made with this new pregame show? And do you like any of the new personalities that are starting to come by?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to evaluate before we see it, but I don't really like the move on paper. I think it's a very Foxy move. I think it's let's go out and get the biggest possible names we can without regard to fit and without regard to how they'll actually work together. And I think that's something we saw with the launch of FS1 back in 2013 of like, oh, hey, we got Andy Roddick. We got Donovan McNabb, whatever, like, how do those pieces possibly work together? Who knows? And a whole lot of that didn't actually last very long, didn't actually work out very well. And what I think's really interesting with this lineup is they've got these names, but they've got these names that, like, they're only names to certain people, really, right? I mean, yes, the casual fan knows who a Matt Leinart is, knows who a Reggie Bush is, and so on, but, like, I mean, they've got people mostly from Notre Dame and USC, and then they've got Urban Meyer in there. And what's interesting about that is if you compare it to other college football programming and so on, a lot of the time, college football isn't necessarily going with the biggest names. They're going with sort of likable personalities. And these guys, like, there's, for each one of these guys, there's a big segment of fans out there that already dislikes them,
yeah,
just for their playing or for their coaching career or for the school they're affiliated with, regardless of what they actually say as a broadcaster. And so I think that's a very interesting move and a very Foxy move of let's just take the biggest name we can sort of find, whether the publicity about them is good or bad. Any publicity is good publicity. So I'm interested to see how they actually fit all those different parts together. And also, if anyone actually watches this compared to the much more established College Game Day.
Well, compared to College Game Day, I think that's a really interesting point. Like, there's people that disagree with Kirk Herbstreit, but nobody's like, F Kirk Herbstreit. Maybe if you're a Michigan grad, you feel that way. You know, same thing goes with Desmond Howard for Ohio State fans, but you know, Reese Davis tends to be a very popular guy. Corso has been a mainstay for God knows how many years. The only time people get mad at him is if he puts on the wrong mascot head. So I think that's a really interesting point, that these are sort of more affable personalities at ESPN. And maybe it's because you're waking up with them as opposed to getting set for, you know, this evening affair. But we'll see whether or not Fox feels like it can work.
Yeah, and I'm also interested with the ratings, like, there's not much of a lead-in on Big Fox for the pregame show. Like ESPN, you know, they have 18 editions of SportsCenter. They're plugging these games all day. On Fox, I mean, it's really just, I think on my local Fox, I was looking last week, and it's infomercials and then pregame show. Like, you're going to have to, like, make that as an appointment. You're not just going to kind of stumble upon this pregame show while you're watching what else you were watching before. So it's really going to be interesting to see if they can kind of get that audience in to change their viewing habits.
Are they going to try and do a pregame to a pregame on FS1 to lead people then over to Fox? Is that the plan?
I honestly have no idea, because they on Fox or on FS1, excuse me, I believe they still have Bundesliga rights that they'll be theoretically putting games on in that. I want to say it's like 9 or 9:30 to 10:30 or 11 a.m. window.
I do think the really interesting thing there though is I think the smartest thing that Fox has done with this is tried to emphasize the noon kickoff games that come right after this and tried to tie this pregame show in to the big noon kickoff thing, right? Like that's even in the name of it. I think they aren't going to get anybody accidentally watching before who sticks around for the pregame show, but I think it's smart for them to emphasize that noon window in game scheduling and try to put some better games there. Because for a long time, that's been quite a weak lineup of games. And I think it makes sense for Fox to be like, okay, we can't compete with ESPN all day long, but we can compete in this window where they have weaker programming. And so I think maybe that's a way that this pregame show sort of works out, is if there's a matchup you want to see that's on Fox at noon, maybe you throw on that channel 30 minutes early or whatever so you don't miss the start of the game. And that way you wind up watching the last bit of their pregame show.
It's kind of what CBS has done over the last several years with their Saturday afternoon game. They've had a smaller pregame show, and even from the extent for college basketball too. You know, Saturday ESPN always had the big name game for college basketball game day, but CBS was also doing those early afternoon broadcasts as well, and it seemed to be effective for them, for whatever that's worth. One other thing that I want to get into as far as the rest of these different broadcasts go, you know, we talked about the idea that all these different football play-by-play guys for the NFL, they've been together for a long time. The teams have been fairly the same. What about on the college side? Is there a particular broadcast, whether it be on CBS or ESPN or ABC or Fox, that maybe stands out to you that not a lot of people know about? There's so many different pairings. Andrew, is there a particular favorite that you have besides maybe some of the main guys that people should know about?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of interesting ones, and I think what's neat about college football is that you do get to see some. I think you get to see people maybe put a little bit more of their stamp on a game, and so you get to see some of these lesser known names sort of shine. One I quite like and who's interesting, and he's come up a little bit in the news recently, is Adam Amin at ESPN. I think he does a very good job. There's been some talk about if he's staying there long term, if he might move to Fox or whatever. But I think he's sort of an underrated guy who doesn't necessarily get as much hype as he should. The other guy, and I'm probably going to butcher this name, but I really like Rene Ingoglia, who does a lot of the smaller games for ESPN, and he's got maybe the most interesting story of any broadcaster out there, in that he's an I believe Orlando police detective during the week, and then goes and calls college football on weekends, and I just think that's a really fascinating story, and the games I've caught with him on have been really interesting. He brings a lot of good insight, but I also really love that backstory.
What about for you, Jar? Are there a couple broadcasts that maybe are outside of the typical ones that we all know about and talk about that you've been fans of?
For some ridiculous reason, I'm a Northwestern fan, so I watch a lot of Big Ten Network games, and I really like Kevin Kugler. And this year he'll be working with Matt Millen, who obviously has been through a whole lot over the last year or so. And he's a great analyst, even though it kind of gets overshadowed from his awful work with the Detroit Lions as their GM. But I really like Matt Millen. I really like Kevin Kugler. And they're going to be working together this season. I really like that pairing. I think they do a good job together. They play off each other really well. I think they're a team that doesn't really get a lot of respect because they get like the third or fourth or fifth best Big Ten game of the week. So they're pretty far down the pecking order. They're not on ESPN. They're not on Fox. They're on one of these league-specific networks that you really only watch if you're desperate to see this game. And I think they're a really good duo.
Yeah, you got to sell some of those games, especially if you're Big Ten Network. And really, they're the ones that set the trend for a lot of these other networks to be successful. And they've continued to get great numbers. And listen, as an Indiana football fan, we're not getting a lot of those games on Big Fox or on ESPN. So Big Ten Network has been where it's at, and I enjoy a Kevin Kugler broadcast as much as anybody. Before I let you guys go, it is the 150th year of college football, and we're already starting to see a lot of these broadcasts start to incorporate the CFB 150 into the mix. Is there anything, Andrew, that you've noticed about it that you particularly like or have disliked about the coverage so far? And do you anticipate anything big as a result of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, the most interesting things are twofold. One is that there's more documentaries, and I'm a sports documentary guy, so I love seeing this. ESPN's coming out with even more than their usual. CBS just announced that they're doing four sides of a story this fall, all focused on college football, and those are going to be on big CBS instead of CBSSN, so that's a nice little boost for them. And I like that. I like that we're seeing that networks are using this anniversary as a great time to bring out some more of those documentaries. The other thing I think that's really interesting about CFP 150 is that was a big factor in moving the Florida-Miami game to week zero. And that wound up being the first game between two Power 5 programs ever played in week zero. It brought in some of the best ratings that ESPN's seen for a college football regular season game in several years. Part of that's because it was pretty much unopposed, but that's still very good news for them. And I think that's something that may translate into more big week zero games, even when it isn't CFB 150. They sort of sold the schools on this with, oh, we'll do it this one time. It's the 150th anniversary. But I think that the results of that showed that there is an audience there for an even earlier start to college football. And when there's an audience, networks and teams usually fall.
Any takeaways for you, Joe, as far as CFB 150 or what you saw out of week zero for college football coverage?
I mean, my main takeaway from the CFB 150 thing is how ESPN is going like full bore with it, with all the documentaries and all the features, and they're really buying all in. And CBS is going a little bit in with just a handful of documentaries and other features and videos and that kind of thing. And then there's Fox, which if you only watch Fox, you would have no idea that CFB 150 is even a thing. So I think it's kind of strange to have one network is all the way in, one is kind of in, and one is kind of pretending it seems like it doesn't exist, which you usually don't see that. You usually kind of see when it's an NCAA thing, all of their broadcast partners kind of towing the same company line. But with this initiative, it's really kind of seems like ESPN is leading the charge and they're the main factor in it while everyone else is just kind of standing back a little bit.
All right, make sure you guys are giving them a follow at Andrew Buchholz on Twitter, as well as at Joe_TOC. They're, of course, the outstanding writers over at awfulannouncing.com. Boys, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Mike Pereira, the former vice president of officiating in the NFL, joins us coming up next. He's currently the rules analyst over at Fox Sports and a great guy to talk to when it comes to all things NFL and some of the rule changes that could be major implications for what's ahead. This is the Awful Announcing Podcast. Don't go anywhere. Mike, thanks for being a part of the podcast today. It's great to catch up with you.
Well, it's great to catch up with you. You know, it's kind of fun what Buffalo Wild Wings is doing, and it's also kind of fun projecting my thoughts about what's going on in the NFL now in terms of rule changes and pass interference and replay and blindside blocks and holding, all these topics of conversations that we have headed into the regular season.
I actually do want to start about what you're doing and what you're teaming up with Buffalo Wild Wings about, and you're helping couples fill out a prenup agreement ahead of football season so that there is no interference all season long. I think this is going to help me out incredibly. I have a 3-month-old son. My wife and I are first-time parents, and I'm also an avid fantasy football player. So any type of agreement at the head of the start of the football season, I feel like this is right up my alley, and I need to go to footballprenup.com immediately. So how does this thing work?
Well, it's really pretty simple. You go on www.footballprenup.com, and I take you through the process of filling out a prenup with your partner, your wife, whatever. And it's basically is, I want these games, and now what do you want in return? And hopefully you're with somebody that's really a good football fan, too, and wants to see all the games. But if not, you know, you could get guaranteed games, and then maybe sometime in the middle of October, you know, she wants to go to the wine country in Napa, so you got to give up a week of football there to, you know, to go somewhere with her. And it's just, it's kind of a fun deal to initiate some conversation with, you know, the person that you're involved with. And, you know, I when they came to me and said, we want you to be our rules official, to put on the prenup official, to put on the striped shirt, I said, man, I wish I had this in my first marriage. I might still be married, for God's sake. So it's I think it's a really fun deal, and Buffalo Wild Wings has come up with a great idea, and so it's really cool.
Listen, if there's a couple things that I've learned since I first got married and now having a kid, it's everything needs to be on the calendar, and then if it's in writing, if it's part of the conversation, then I think your argument holds up just a tad bit better than before.
No, I think you're absolutely right.
I'd love to go back a little bit with you, and I was curious as to what you remember about the first game you ever officiated. How did you feel? Were there nerves? And, you know, it's been on several years after that, but what do you remember about that first game?
Well, the first game, if you can believe it, I had the Packers and the Patriots. That was my very first game as an NFL official. And I was, like, so nervous. I was working a side judge position deep downfield, the guy that has to make the pass interference calls. And I was incredibly nervous, didn't know if I could do it or not. I came out of the Western Athletic Conference, and from the WAC to the NFL was obviously a huge jump. And so I was really fearful. And then after the game was over, I was, like, high as a kite because I felt like it was easy and it wasn't really difficult at all. And then my crusty head linesman, who's on the same side of the field with me, when I said, you know, I can do this, this isn't that tough, he said to me, "Rook, this is preseason week one, for God's sake. This is nothing more than a scrimmage." He said, "It's going to get so much tougher." And he was right. But, you know, it is kind of funny because I ended up feeling so high after that game in Lambeau Field and against the Patriots, and I was able to do it, that, you know, I went home and proposed after being in a relationship for 8 years, and I proposed and then ended up with football remorse the next day. But that's another story.
Well, still, to be able to be that excited after your first game, I was going to say, you know, I was curious as to when after that moment you had your first welcome to the NFL moment.
Well, I had it early in the, I think it was my second game of my career, my first pass interference call, when I called it and the referee, who happened to be Mike Carey, came down to me and said, "What do you got?" And I said, "Well, I don't know," because the head linesman, who's this 20-year veteran, came to me before the referee got there and said, "What did you call?" And I said, "Defensive pass interference." He said, "Not a good call. The defender went straight up." And I went, like, this is my first. Really? And then the back judge came over, another great veteran, who said, "What do you got?" And I said, "Defensive pass interference." "Great call," he says. "He played through the back." So I get these two guys now giving me conflicting information. Then the referee, Mike Carey, came up and said, "What do you got?" And I said, "I don't know. This guy says it is. This guy says it isn't." He said, "Well, what are you going to go with?" I said, I'm gonna stick with it being pass interference." He said, "Okay, what number?" I said, I, after all this, I don't know. He said, "How about 31? And then I said, "Well, if you knew, why'd you ask me?" You know, so that was like my indoctrination into my first pass interference call in the NFL. So I won't forget that. That's for sure.
That sounds like quite a moment. I think you've been now at Fox for what, 9, 10 seasons now?
Yeah, this will be my 10th season.
So what did you think the position would be when they first hired you, and how have you seen it evolve over the past 9 years?
Well, I mean, I didn't know what it was going to be, because when they first reported that I was retiring from the league, they reported it a year in advance of when I retired. They called me and said, "You know, we're going to put something together for you. We don't know what it is, but we're not going to do this to your wife. You know, you're going to work on weekends with us." And they thought something, you know, on the internet side, and, you know, doing rule clarifications, you know, online. And then somebody said, "Well, what do you think? Should we try him on air? If something comes up, you know, where he could maybe get some clarity on air, then that might be really useful." So they dressed me up in a suit, put me in a little studio, and said, "You know, if something like comes up that's really major, you know, then we'll have the ability to bring you into the broadcast." Well, what happened? How about Calvin Johnson?
Yeah.
Calvin Johnson with Detroit, Chicago, and that thing where, you know, the announcers, which were Tom Brenneman and Brian Billick, they didn't know. And then they said, "You know, we've got a new feature here. Let's go to Los Angeles, bring in Mike Pereira." And so they bring me in on maybe the toughest play I've ever had to rule on, when I didn't know what the hell they were going to do, you know, on the field. And so, after them kind of saying, "Well, Mike, what do you think?" And I quoted the rule. "Yeah, well, what do you think they're going to do?" I said, "Well, the rules." Finally, they got mad at me and said, "Well, what are they going to do?" And I said, "Well, they ended up calling it incomplete. I think they'll stay with incomplete." And thankfully, my dear, dear friend, Gene Steratore, stayed with it being incomplete on the field, and thus the role was born. And so I did that for what turned out to be 8 years, I guess it is. And then we hired Dean Blandino. Then that allowed me to be in the booth on site all the time with the A crew, Joe Buck and Troy Aikman and Aaron Andrews. So that's where it is now. So it's been quite a run.
Did your friend Gene Steratore end up finding a case of Tito's outside of his house a couple weeks later?
Forget the Tito's. He found a check in his mailbox. Come on, man.
I know the big.
But now he owes me. He owes me because he's doing this gig. Between he and McCauley and John Perry and Blandino, I'm the one that started this, and I keep like asking for just a small little cut, you know, of what they're making. Zippers on their pocket.
We're talking to NFL trailblazer Mike Pereira on the Awful Announcing podcast. I know the big thing that everyone's been asking you about is the new pass interference reviews, and you've been all over it on Twitter. And you mentioned that you probably expect this to be a factor maybe once per game, but as long as recency bias tends to play a role for the NFL fan, how often will we see a review like this as sort of over-amplified for what it actually is?
I just, based on the way that they're handling it now in New York, I just don't think it's going to be a big deal. I think you can just go into the season right now to say, if they call it on the field, forget it, don't challenge it, don't stop it. They're not going to change it if there's any contact whatsoever. The only time you're going to get it changed if it's not called, and then it's clear and obvious, like it was in New Orleans, that it should have been called. All the factors were there. The pass was catchable. The contact significantly hindered the receiver's ability to make the catch. It was clear and obvious. And I think that's what they're trying to correct. Now, I know the rule covers the entire game. And so you could say that possibly there could be a lot of stops, but it's not going to stop. They're not going to get overturned. I mean, only a total of 6 calls were overturned in all of preseason. So that's a overturn rate of, when flag is not thrown up, like 13%. And so your chances of a coach winning a challenge are really slim. And they value their timeouts and their challenges in the regular season more than they do the preseason. So I really think it's going to be something that we are going to look at it, and we're going to be talking about something else different by the time we get to week 2, and maybe it's offensive holding, which has been up in the preseason, but I still don't like the rule because I don't believe that replay belongs in judgment, which is what pass interference is. But, I'm looking in to say is if the New York keeps the way that they're doing it now and they don't get too into getting too technical, it might be all right and catch the big air when it happens.
We got another minute or two with NFL rules analyst and also college analyst Mike Pereira here on the Awful Announcing podcast. We always learn about the game day or the game week experience for players and for coaches, but can you give us a little inside look into what a typical week looks like for an NFL referee, what the preparation is like, when do they find out their assignments, how much communication is there with the other teams that are involved? What is that week and process like?
It starts quickly, like right after the game. So you get a copy, you get a drive of your game, 30 minutes after the game is over, 20 minutes after the game is over for you to look at on your way back home. There's always plays that happen as an official. Should I have called this? Should I not have called this? And so you'll see them on airplanes, looking back and watching their game. And then the process of review starts in New York on Monday, and then the officials get their grade sheets on either Monday afternoon or Tuesday. And so they have to go through all the grades, and then if they dispute one of a grade that is given or a decision that has been made by the people in the league office, they can write up a sheet saying that this is why they made the call. And then finally, on Wednesday, after final review, they get their grades, and then they start their final grades, and then they start reviewing for their next game. They have a test they have to do. They're basically involved every day. I mean, people talk about referees should be full-time. They're probably so close to full-time now, with all that they have to do, including their travel to and from games. But I always said to new officials, guess what? You've enjoyed officiating so much, man. You loved it in high school. college was great. You played golf on Saturdays, and I mean on Fridays, and then had a game on Saturday. In the NFL, this is now a business, and you're paid. You're paid like a, you know, properly like a businessman, and there's anxiety that goes with it, and there's no doubt it's every week is a stressful week for officials.
Last thing for you, Mike, you're heading over to Buffalo Wild Wings. You're going to get some wings, throw on a couple glasses of Tito's. Which current NFL referee would be, or I guess even past referee, would be that guy that you want to go have a couple drinks and some wings with?
I think I want to do it with Jim Tunney. I don't know if you remember Jim Tunney, but he was a guy that was so stoic on the field, and he was just a great referee. And in the back of the rule book still to this day, it's his pictures given the signals. It's his body. It's the same form that he used. And so I'd love to delve into his head, because he was off the field long before I got involved in the league. But he's still alive and still kicking down in Monterey, and that's the guy I would love to spend some time with.
Make sure you guys are following Mike on Twitter at Mike Pereira, as well as heading over to footballprenup.com. That can make sure that you and your significant other are on the same page this football season. I'm heading there now. I will get my wife to join me as well. Mike, I've enjoyed your work for many years. Have a great season, and thanks for making time for us today.
My pleasure. Thanks.